On Pop Fiction Women, we explore what it means to be a complicated woman.
Tired of endless variations of leading men next to one-dimensional archetypes of women, or strong female leads written by men that were essentially guys in women's bodies.
We started this show to highlight the many female characters in entertainment worth exploring, as well as the women who dreamt them up.
And now we're adding those creators to our conversations, discussing their process and passion in bringing these women to life.
Welcome to Complicated Conversations.
On these episodes, there's no spoilers.
So come on, it's starting. On this episode of Complicated Conversations, we welcome Deepti Kapoor, the author of A Bad Character and her new novel, Age of Vice, which is the GMA Book Club pick for January. An instant bestseller, this thrilling crime drama has been called India's answer to The Godfather by The Guardian. We're going to talk about that a little bit.
Good.
Welcome to Pop Fiction Women, Deepti.
It's a real pleasure to be talking to you both. Thanks for having me.
Good. So before we want to talk about the book, but before that, it's been out for a little bit, and this isn't your first book, but it is the first time you're really thrust into the spotlight.
Gosh.
You're still in such demand for interviews, and there's a lot going on around this book. How are you feeling? Are you processing it? Are you in survival mode? Are you enjoying every single second of it? What, somewhere in between, probably?
Yeah, all of those things.
Yes, I was just coming to that. It's all of those things. I am surviving it. It's been physically exhausting because I have, I was in New York earlier in the month, then to Paris, then actually ended up going to Jaipur, back home, India, just for the weekend, which feels really strange for a literature festival, and then came back home to Lisbon. Just happy, tired, figuring out that probably this is not the right month to do a dry January. This isn't working. I'm gonna need a drink at the end of the day.
Yes,
absolutely. So, well, you can get a pass this year, I think. It's a big year. So
Exactly.
I've done dry January many times. I've now decided there's never a good January to do dry January. I've just kind of moved past that now.
I mean, it's always cold and it gets cold faster and darker. And what are you going to do in those long evenings,
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, so we want to jump in to some of your characters here. We are Pop Fiction Women, so we do focus on women on this podcast. So we'd love to start with Neda. Am I pronouncing that right?
It's Neda.
Neda.
Yeah. So Neda spent several years as a journalist, along with her mentor, Dean, who had written sort of a scandalous piece about the Wadia family, but ultimately was threatened into not publishing it. And so we'd love to hear about your development of Neda, but specifically, how through her character you were able to sort of explore this relationship between power and influence and journalism. And I know you have some personal insights into that, I'm sure, since you were previously a journalist yourself.
Well, first, I think it's really interesting to have, I was a journalist myself, so I could use some of the experience of those years and transpose them into a fictional world. But also, having a journalist is great for exposition. I mean, purely like banal answers. And also because this world is one of corruption, of abuse of power, of crony capitalism. There is so much. And also you have this big family at the center of it all, pulling the strings. So I was really interested in exploring that relationship between power and influence, as you said, but also the complicity and compromises that someone, a character like Neda, will have to make with her morality. Because Neda thinks she's a good person, but how can she be when she's sitting on top of this desperately unequal ladder? She's right on top of it. And she is naive, but also curious. And she's caught between her morality and desire. Yeah. She's caught between wanting to do the right thing and then ultimately being a coward, and then having the awareness only later about this world. She's also very young. I was also interested in the in having her come from a very sort of culturally elite family, but whose power is on the wane in the new India because it's being eclipsed by this coarse new money that also was brought on by liberalization, by the way the economy sort of broke down and changed very rapidly from a socialist one to a capitalist one, and all the people who benefited from that. So, you know, a middle class was created, but also there were so many people who were left behind.
Yeah, yeah. Did I read that you called her a recovering coward? Is that what you said?
I don't remember, but that's really... I often don't remember what I said. Yeah. Actually, that is
fair. That's fair.
Absolutely. That's an apt way to describe her. You know,
but
she is.
That's a lot of maturity and kind of growing up, right? When the scales fall from your eyes and you realize, you know, maybe I could have done something differently. I could have. It's just a part of growing up, maturing in one sense of the word.
Yeah, and I also think that. For me personally, I don't believe that character changes that much, which is, of course, difficult when you're writing fiction, because if you're looking at arcs and you say character doesn't change, how are you going to show that? I think, you know, circumstances shift and change, but characters often do stay similar. So that's been really interesting for me. From a personal point of view, to explore my personal belief that character doesn't change, but to do it in a fictional world where you are trying to show transformation as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that is something Kate and I talk about all the time and kind of struggle with identifying what is a core person? Like, who am I at my core? But also, how do I, you know, change when I'm in one circumstance to the other? And how do I present so differently? And what is really, you know, who I am? And what is kind of a face I'm putting on or a farce I'm trying to, you know, get into? And
yeah, I mean, what's the core of you? And that's always the most interesting thing for, you know, for me as a writer, as to discover in characters.
I think baby steps, little changes can make a big difference. But you're right. People don't have this grand arc from something totally different to a new thing at the end.
And yet drama is realistic. Built on that. Right?
It is.
Exactly.
You're right.
So that's always interesting, you know, like reconciling these competing thoughts, interests, ideologies. Right. Because I mean, I think a lot of people do believe that you can change yourself and you can change character.
Yeah. You know? And a lot of people believe falsely that when you change your circumstances, you will change. And it can be different. You can be, you know, slightly different, but it's not the kind of transformation sometimes we're sold.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
People forget they're still stuck with themselves, even though
wherever you go.
That core is coming with you.
And if you're on like a luxury 5-star, you know, beach house or island somewhere, you know, you still have yourself to deal with.
Well, so this novel is told in 3 parts and told from 3 different points of view. You've already discussed Netta, as we've talked about, and then the other two, Ajay and Sunny.
Yeah.
I was curious if you want to tell us a little bit about them and who was the hardest to write and which one kind of was the last puzzle piece that made the whole novel kind of click together for you?
Okay, so I'll start with the first question. Ajay and Sunny. So Sunny is the son, the only son and heir to this vast business fortune and you know, sort of nefarious criminal empire that his father has built, Bunty Vadia, but he wants to move away from his father. He wants to launder the family reputation. He wants to build the city. He has very grand ideas, but he's not ruthless like his father. So we're going to see the tension in that and the dynamic and how he figures out who he wants to be. And Ajay, who is really the heart of the novel. We start with Ajay, He is this young boy when we meet him who is sold off by his mother in order to pay off a family debt when his father dies tragically, finds his way in is working in the mountains for a sweet couple who and eventually working on a dairy farm. He makes his way to a guest house where he meets Sunny, who changes his life, who offers him a job in the city. Ajay takes it, moves there, and then, you know, tragically, with tragic consequences, Sunny manipulates him. But I was interested in Ajay. I remember having the characters of Sunny and Neda kind of already mapped out. But it was not until I had come to the character of Ajay that I knew I had my novel. And that was also, I was traveling in the mountains. I met a young boy with a story of loss who was working in a guest house who had been sent by his family. And he was just full of hope for the future, even though, you know, he didn't have much going for him.
Right. Yeah.
And I combined his story with the story of the young men who work as domestics, whether they'd be servants or chauffeurs or butlers in these big private mansions in Delhi that I witnessed when I lived in Delhi, worked as a journalist, but partied a lot at night, had access to all these places. And when I combined these two, that's when I had Ajay and that's when I had my novel.
Yeah. So. And was it a moment of like, aha, like this is, it clicks in and I can go and did it take off from there, the writing
of
it?
I remember because I was kind of stuck, you know, it was kind of becoming like a Delhi less than zero or a Gatsby, but I wasn't, you know, what Delhi Gatsby, rich people do horrible things and then retreat behind their wealth. Yeah. Of course, Gatsby so much more, and it's one of my favorite books of all time, but I didn't want to just do that. And I realized very soon that if I'm writing about the super rich in India, then really it's a story about extreme inequality as well and corruption.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's when it kind of pivoted and changed. And I realized that these are the themes I want to address while also kind of smuggling them into an entertaining story.
Yeah.
I love that. Smuggling them into an entertaining story.
And I love, we love to hear those moments of when the story clicks from the authors. Yeah. It's just, it's the best. So one of the things that you hear repeatedly or read all the time about this novel is how cinematic it is. I mean, that word is used everywhere for good reason. So was that something you had in mind when writing it, or otherwise do you just write with such a visual quality or what?
Didn't have that in mind, but I do, I think visually. So I think in images and scenes, and then I translate them into prose. And I think that really helped with the cinematic writing, or with people thinking it's cinematic, because I love watching film as well. But I mean, it's just, I guess it's just the way I write, you know.
Yeah.
I can see the scenes and then I see the various characters, you know, in that scene. And then they may be like thinking something or doing something, or there's some dialogue, and then everyone else adjusts accordingly. But and that gets translated. So
I love that.
Yeah. You seem to, I hope to come back to this question, but you seem to rely a lot on your subconscious or something to make these things. And I know that you're a little hesitant to put words in it because it's beyond words. You're like, this is just how I see. I don't know how to explain it to you.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, it's hard because, it's so much of it is instinct. So much of it is working with the subconscious, so much, and working with, sometimes that can hinder the process, especially if you're writing, say, a plotted novel and you have an outline, which, I mean, I don't outline, but I do have a general idea of how, you know, things will proceed. But sometimes something just inserts its way into the narrative, a character suddenly will come in. And then you just got to work your way around it. And, it's sometimes it's an organic process, but it's also quite chaotic.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just chasing your characters and just managing them.
Yeah.
So. Get back in here.
Yes. Yes. I am the controller of the situation. But I want to talk about what Kate said about cinematic, and you were talking about you loving film. And I want to bring it back to The Godfather, which is what Guardian had said about this was the, like I said in the bio, India's answer to The Godfather. First, I want to back up. Your book really defies genre, right? It is part crime thriller, but this epic saga, there's gangster corruption, but also you're not afraid to, through the story, confront the reader and make the reader confront their own ideas of what's right and wrong morally, politically, what are our obligations and our responsibilities. But I want to, like I said, focus on the gangster element, which to me, again, evokes kind of shady deals, violence as a means of compliance, greed as a driving force. I feel like I'm very happy to have you to talk about this, but I feel like people associate these things with men and the masculine. And I'm glad I haven't heard any kind of false, oh, it's written by a woman. Yay. But I've always been really attracted to those stories. Rage of Angels by Sidney Sheldon, I read when I was way too young. And The Godfather is one of my favorites. And I wondered if you too think that or have any feelings around why that's typically considered a masculine domain.
Yeah, I think a lot has changed. But, generally men tend to write about guns and violence and crime. And when you think of the big crime writers, you think of the men, but then there's also Highsmith, Patricia Highsmith. She's a master at this and at this craft. So it's just, but women not always tend to get associated with domestic fiction or feelings.
Yeah.
Feelings, as if men don't have feelings. And I really wanted to challenge that. And I also was writing an extremely masculine world. North India, UP, Delhi, gangsters. I mean, not all, but you associate gangsters with being men, at least, and there are a few women. Mm-hmm. And women can be horrible and tough and cruel and violent as well. But, it does often get associated with being a man's world. And I was happy to step into that and just say, I'm going to try writing this. And so what if it's, and the great thing is, as you said, like no one's saying, she's a woman. Yeah.
Right.
It's like, it's fine.
Yeah. I'm so glad I haven't heard that, because I'm glad that you're in this world, but it shouldn't be as remarkable as maybe it might have been, 10 years ago.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Same. That it's just about the writing.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Delhi and some of the other places this is set. And, we've talked with authors in the past too. Certain books, really, the setting feels like another character in the novel. And I think it's really remarkable when that's done well, when it really does feel that way. So particularly like Delhi, you really bring to life in this. So, why was that important to you, or what were you hoping to capture about it in this novel?
So Delhi for me is a city I have an extremely intense relationship with. It's where I came of age. It's where some, important life-changing events happened to me in a very short period of time. I had these two big debts, and that sort of set me off on a different journey in my 20s. And I worked as a journalist, drove around everywhere, met a whole lot of people from different backgrounds, hung out with cops, with criminals, with, very wealthy heirs to big fortunes. I love stories myself where, which have a really strong sense of place. Mm-hmm. And I wrote Age of Ice, most of it sitting in Lisbon, because we moved in 2018 here. But I had it all inside me. It's like I could feel... I could feel the sun, I could hear the thousands of birds in Delhi. I could hear the train horns, the cars, the rattle of air conditioners and, ceiling fans. So I really wanted to get that, that landscape, the soundscape, the pleasure and the pain of living in Delhi, the intoxication that you feel when you're in the city. It's also, it's as beautiful and grotesque in equal degrees, And if I could get some of that in, that was what I was aiming to do.
I love the way you play in extremes, right? You've just said beautiful and grotesque. And I think you had also in an interview written about like the cold winters and the boiling hot summers and how it's not a tame or stable earth. And it just, all of these ways that you see it and feel it in these extremes, but also without having to reconcile them is just really, it's what brings it to life for me.
Yeah, I mean, thank you. It's great because I was hoping to convey some of that, you know, that intoxicating feeling of being there, but also just the streets, you know, and what being on the streets is like. And then going to someone's house and they because it's often quite an unpleasant sensation. It's very hot most of the year. It's noisy, it's polluted. And then someone invites you into like this grand palatial home and serves you champagne, you know, and whatever else you want. It feels served by someone like Ajay. It's very seductive. And then you end up making terrible compromises.
Right.
Yeah.
Because
really rich ground to explore for trauma anyway.
Yeah, absolutely.
The contradictions.
Yeah. Like I said, you seem to do this all throughout, just maybe your personality, your core self, is to kind of embrace those contradictions without reconciling them, without trying to cancel one out over the other. It makes for really rich characters and rich setting. But I also understand that you embrace that in your writing process as well. Kind of this, like, everything is content. You're looking around, you're taking notes in your mind. But then when you're really writing, you shut the world out. And so you're taking in the world during one part of the process, and the other part of the process, you don't want anything to do with the world. Is that how you feel it is, like kind of that cycle of extremes?
Yeah, I think so. And it's really important for me to experience the world, especially when, you know, I lived in India, but I'm also back in India. It's like just sort of dive headlong into everything, whether it's unpleasant or not. You know, be uncomfortable if it means you're going to get material. And not pursuing a story like it's an investigation and you're a journalist. I think, you know...
Right, for fiction.
You could, for example, if you're hanging out with an arms dealer's son or something, you know, in a five-star hotel bar or an arms dealer, as a journalist, you're going to be like, I need to get something out of this guy.
Yeah.
Right? But as a novelist, you're just going to be drinking whiskey with him.
Hearing stories, and that's it, for hours.
And then maybe years later, that will find its way into your fiction. So, but then when you actually write, you have to shut everything out. And that's what works for me. I know everyone has their own process.
Sure. Right. So I want to return to the characters, just the three main characters kind of all feel trapped. Each one is unable to escape or transcend their circumstances, no matter how hard they try. So what does that say to you about the world of the novel, or what were you speaking to there?
I think it says that however hard, I mean, especially for a character like Ajay, there are people who are, they feel that they're trapped in a world that they have no control over and that they can't get out of. I mean, there's also, for Ajay, it's the expendability of him, of his, of his situation, of his life. He's so expendable. No one cares about him enough. His loyalty is, you know, used and manipulated by Sunny. But then there are people like Sunny who you think, okay, he could change his situation. He could change the situation for people around him. He could make a better life for people around him who are, say, lesser than him, but he chooses not to. What does that say about him? But he also still believes that he's a casualty of like this age.
Right.
Yeah, of this world. And Neda as well. And I think Neda has a lot to answer for, because she really makes this choice, this cowardly decision that changes the course of everyone's life. I mean, I know Sunny does it too, but Neda had, you know, this idea that she could have made that decision and it would have changed at least Ajay's situation, but she doesn't do that. And well, of course, the novel pivots on that. So
yes,
it would have been a different novel otherwise.
Right. Yes. So to wrap up I want to talk about what you maybe are loving right now, what you're reading or watching or taking in that helps you kind of fill up your pot. Or if you're not doing that right now because you're giving a lot of publicity, maybe you want to mention anything that people who love your book should go read as maybe influences for you.
Well, I'm watching a bunch of things. I'm watching Happy Valley, which is this crime show set in Yorkshire. Yeah, it's my husband's from Yorkshire, so I can't mispronounce it. So
you won't hear the end of that. Yes,
yeah. I am reading a couple of books. I don't have it here, but I'm reading. It's this big chunky Diaries of Patricia Highsmith, which it's like big.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's great because it's just like talking about her from the time she was, young writer with no real prospects to when she got older and was, famous and wealthy. But, it's just about her loves, her life, her writing process, lots of gin.
Uh-huh. Oh, nice. Gin.
And then I drank. Yeah. This I like to dip in and out of because it's just interesting. Yeah. I'm also reading a book called Cremation, which is a Spanish author. It's called Crematoria. It's translated as Cremation, which is similar to the themes of Age of Ice, but it's set in Valencia about, again, rapid transition from a poor kind of agrarian society into one that gets transformed into this beachfront Mediterranean seaside properties. So there is corruption, there is wealth being created overnight, and there's all the changes that it brings to the local population. So that's very interesting. Yeah. So just a bunch of things.
Yeah.
On one thing at the moment.
So. Yeah. Well, that's fair. I love when someone who writes a 560 page book says another book is big.
Yeah, exactly.
We saw the picture. It's, that is a big book.
Yeah.
And I know this is Age of Ice is the first in a trilogy, so I assume you're also maybe working on the next one?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
I'm making notes. I'm thinking about structure. I've kind of got a very firm idea of where and how it's going to start. And I'm actually really excited to dive back into it. Yeah,
good. That's great.
Good. We love to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It was so good of you to take time out, and we've really enjoyed hearing more about the background of this.
I know.
Book.
I mean, it was pleasure's all mine. It was real fun talking to you guys. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
This has been Pop Fiction Women with Corinne and Kate.
If you enjoyed this show, please tell the complicated women in your life.
And the men who love them.
Yes, tell them to listen. And then to follow on Spotify or review and subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And of course, share on social media.
Tag us with your favorite books, TV shows, and movies starring complicated women on Facebook and Instagram at Pop Fiction Women or on Twitter at Pop_Women.
For more coverage of the women you love or to find out if you qualify as a complicated woman, go to popfictionwomen.com.
And keep it complicated.